We interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 13 of Chat with a Cat. This is being recorded on April 13th. We're recording this 2025. We're recording this immediately after the preseason going into season three, the 1982-83 season of the NPBSL. And wow, what an offseason. Had a lot of things happen that I did not see coming. And then, of course, I can do a little bit of reacting, maybe a little bit later on, to the special All Commissioners podcast. So I'm just going to jump into it. And this is going to be, as usual, for Chat with a Cat. It's going to be stream of consciousness. And we're going to kind of cover what there is to cover. I thought I would start with the off season by covering a lot of the trades that happened, because I think this was an off season with a lot of action. And again, I didn't see a lot of these trades really coming. There were a few, where you saw people shopping around on the trade block, and so you could kind of anticipate that things were going to happen. But, there were a lot of teams very quickly tearing their teams down and completely rebuilding these teams. And so we're going to go back in time to the beginning of the off season, before it really became clear what was going on in terms of trade direction. We're going to start with the Bucks Supersonics trade, wherein the Bucks sent Ray Williams and points to the Supersonics for the Bucks 1983 first and Lewis Lloyd. As the commissioners talked about on their podcast, this was kind of the first domino to fall in the Bucks tearing their team down. And as mentioned on that call, it's always a good idea before you decide to blow up your team to make sure that you have your own draft pick. So here the Bucks were basically executing this trade to get their own draft pick. For the Sonics, this was getting good value for that draft pick in the person of Ray Williams. The Sonics, I think, are ready to start building up now that they've had a draft where they kind of bottomed out, got the number one overall pick, and they're ready to build up around Dominique Wilkins. So perhaps, not a surprise from the Sonics' perspective once they knew that the Bucks wanted to get their pick back. A little bit surprising from the Bucks to blow things up immediately after making the league finals, but this seems to be a very Doug habit. So, Doug doing Doug, I suppose. Later on that day, there was a trade between Portland and Seattle. And again, this was kind of talked about on the commissioner's podcast, with Portland sending points to Seattle in exchange for Orlando Woolridge. Woolridge got hit last season in training camp and so probably lost some of his value. This was a gamble on my part that I could get away with sending essentially, points to me are kind of the equivalent of cash. So buying a player on a very cheap contract because he was an end of the first round pick contract for cash and hope the TC gods smile on him and give him back some of the stuff that they'd taken. If you followed training camp, that bet paid off. But again, for the Supersonics, it was about accumulating fungible assets, stuff that they could easily move around. Orlando Woolridge wasn't that. He wasn't part of their long-term plans. And for me, it was one of those things, and I've talked about it in past podcasts, where generally I tend to go with a rotation that's 7 or 8 deep, and every other roster spot I try as much as possible to dedicate either to a specialist player for particular matchups, or I dedicate to holding on to young players that I hope will get blessed by the training camp gods, and in this case, Orlando Woolridge was definitely the latter, so he got his blessing, and we'll see what that means for him going forward in Portland. The next domino to fall was kind of the big one. I think this was the move that kind of shaped the offseason. It was certainly the move that I think will be the most impactful in the upcoming season, and this was the Bucks moving off of Robert Parrish and beginning to break up their strong front court. They sent him to the Warriors. They got back Alton Lister, who is probably Parrish's equal defensively, but not close to his equal offensively. The difference here is Alton Lister is still on a rookie deal and much, much younger than Parrish. So this is a win-now move on the part of the Warriors, which makes sense. Moses is getting into his prime, and so it's time to try to win now. The Warriors sent back a couple of first-round picks. The 1982 first was the 18th pick. I don't imagine the 1984 pick is going to amount to much. I know 1984 is the quote-unquote legendary draft, but if you ask me right now, the Warriors are the favorite to win it all this upcoming season, and unless they decide to rip it down to the studs, which I can't see them doing, they will probably be the odds-on favorite to win the title next season. So this is just, Doug, I think, offloading talent for picks, yes, but also for cap flexibility. This way he doesn't have to max Parrish out in a couple years when his team expires. I think Doug may have pushed the explode button a season early, but perhaps he's trying to get two seasons to get all his ducks in a row to tank in 1984. I don't know. You'd have to ask him. The next trade, as I look at this, I realize it was kind of the Bucks and Blazers going back and forth, was the 76ers-Blazers trade, wherein Norm Nixon went to the 76ers. Portland also included their first-round pick in 1983 and some points to get the number 5 and the number 26 pick. The number 26 pick really didn't amount to anything, so this was essentially for the number 5 pick, which turned into James Worthy. This was a pretty straightforward trade as far as I go. Norm Nixon did not fit my roster. He had talent, so I was trying to find a way to get a player that better fit my roster. I think Worthy is a better fit. For Gary's part, he wanted to get a point guard, and if you look at the training camp that Nixon had, I think he actually wound up getting a very good point guard. Nixon is, this is not me trying to blow smoke, Nixon is 27, which means you don't have to worry about him decaying in training camp for a couple of years, which is nice. He's got very high scoring abilities, 81 in inside, 81 in jump shot, 89 in handles and passing. So Gary has solidified his point guard spot for the foreseeable future, which, going along with Michael Thompson and Larry Nance, you know, probably makes things nice for him. So he's got what I think could be a solid rotation if he's able to find a way of utilizing his players together. I think it's even possible that Nixon could challenge Michael Thompson and lead the team in scoring this year just with his inside scoring ability. So, you know, something to watch out for there. Is it as good long-term as the number 5 pick? I mean, probably not, just because the number 5 pick is younger, but Worthy is 22 and Nixon is 27, so it's probably a little bit of short-term pain, but given the Bucks were blowing their team up, and I think Gary is rightfully looking at the East and thinking, you know, with the right moves, I could compete now, I can see where he would want to roll with that. Next up was another Bucks trade, and this was the Bucks and the Kings, wherein Bill Laimbeer, the other half of the Bucks' scary front court, went over to the Kansas City Kings for Eddie Johnson and 5 points. Again, this is the Bucks getting younger. For the Kings, it's a win-now move. As we know on the Commissioner's podcast, Darth has said he's the kind of guy that likes to compete now, and I think his move for Calvin Natt last year gave him a centerpiece to build around. Mike Gminski's jump last year helped. So now he's firmly in win-now mode, and Bill Laimbeer, I think, does a good job of bridging both winning now and winning in the future. He's 25, Gminski's 23, Nat is 25. So Darth has a squad that has a core that is still going to be pretty good for the next few seasons. The only thing I would be scared about if I'm Darth is he's going to have to pay Nat in this upcoming off season, and then he's going to have to pay Lambeer the season after that. He's also going to have to pay Gminsky this upcoming off season. So his team is about to get very expensive, but on the other hand, none of these guys is old, and it's probably okay to pay a premium for players in that age range because you're going to continue to get production out of them for quite some time. The next trade, this one kind of surprised me, honestly. I knew the Celtics had been shopping Bernard King, but I didn't think that they would trade for him last offseason and turn around and move him this offseason. But it was Bernard King and Elvin Hayes going out to the Dallas Mavericks for the number 7 overall pick. I thought the Celtics maybe could have gotten a little more return for King alone, let alone including Hayes. I think this is a very good pickup for the Mavericks. It makes them into an offensive powerhouse. A front court of Hayes and Issel, and then Bernard King, Mike McGee, George Gervin, Johnny Moore on the wings and on the backcourt. That's a very, very potent offensive lineup. Even Maurice Lucas is very good. So the caveat I would see for the Mavericks is it's kind of the same thing that was talked about on the Commissioner's podcast. The defense may not quite be there. So this could be the classic team that scores 120 and gives up 125. We'll see if the Mavericks have some more moves in them to help shore up their defense. But at least from an offensive point of view, I think, if the Kings loaded up by grabbing Bill Lambeer, I think the Mavericks made an even bigger offensive move by acquiring Bernard King. That looks pretty darn good. The next trade that happened was another Seattle-Portland trade, and this is where Kareem Abdul-Jabbar left Portland to go to Seattle in exchange for a 1982 first-round pick. The number 15 overall. This one was pretty simple from my perspective. Kareem is getting older. I would rather sell a year too early than a year too late. And so I wanted to get off the books with him before I had to start paying a lot of max salaries. We'll get to that in a minute here when we get to free agency. Seattle had been eyeing Kareem for a while. And again, this kind of jump starts the rebuild that David is doing out in Seattle, with picking up Williams from the Bucks and Kareem. He solidifies his center, he solidifies his point guard, he's got his wing in Dominique Wilkins. So I think, it's just another building block essentially in the Seattle rebuild plan. Next up was a three-way trade. I think this is the first three-way trade we've seen in the new league, and this was the Bucks, the Clippers, and the Celtics, wherein the Bucks sent Walter Davis to the Clippers. I like that pickup for them. Cliff Levingston to the Celtics, I'm fairly sanguine on. They also sent some points to the Celtics. The Clippers sent Mark Eaton to the Celtics and sent a first-round pick to the Bucks, and the Celtics sent Sleepy Floyd to the Bucks. I think I mentioned this in the Discord chat, perhaps. I thought about taking Sleepy Floyd with the number 5 pick. He wound up going to the Clippers instead a little bit later. And I really liked Sleepy. The one thing that worried me was his current handles and passing were in the 20s, even though they were A's. And we'll get to training camps in a minute, but at least to me, that told me he was 6, 7, 8 years away, meaning by the time he actually got to those A ratings, he's now 28, 29 and starting the downside of his career. I didn't feel I could wait that long. I needed somebody who was a little more ready. The Bucks have been accumulating points, and I'm sure they're going to try to pay to accelerate his training. I think Sleepy projects to be a very good passing and offensive point guard, the guy who can score 20 and average 10 assists. So I think, the Bucks will be very happy with Sleepy's production going forward. For the Clippers, they picked up Walter Davis. That's kind of their, I guess, guard of now, which is fine. He's an excellent player, obviously was part of the Bucks core that went to the finals last season. And then the Celtics picked up Mark Eaton. Again, the Celtics, after trading Bernard King, seem to have gone into rebuild mode and are accumulating young assets. I think Eaton is an interesting project. He's probably going to be in contention for Defensive Player of the Year in 2 to 3 years. But he is all defense. It's all rebounds and shot blocking and post defense. But maybe the Celtics think that that's how they're going to be able to neutralize the Twin Towers lineups that they've been having to play against in the East. Although, ironically, now it looks like the flavor du jour for bigs in the East between Alton Lister and Mark Eaton is defensive-minded guys. And so if you've got a defensive powerhouse going up against another defensive powerhouse, I'm not sure how much you're taking away from your opponent. Next up was a quick swap between the Sonics and the Jazz of second-round picks. The Sonics gave up their number 24 this season for the Jazz, second in 83 and a second round, or in 5 points. I don't think this was much. There must have been somebody there that the Jazz liked. I think it was Mark McNamara that they picked up. Trading a few points for a second round pick and another second round pick, as far as I'm concerned, it's a wash. So nothing huge and earth shaking there. Then we had the second biggest surprise of the offseason, I would say. Doug deciding to blow it up was the first biggest surprise, but the Knicks deciding to blow it up by trading Buck Williams, I thought was fascinating. It was interesting that they sent him in division, but they got a pretty good haul for him. They got Trent Tucker. They got David Greenwood, who was re-signed. They got the Kings 84 first. They got a Washington 85 first and a Washington 85 second, which probably isn't going to amount to much. This is really about, at least in my opinion, David Greenwood and the two firsts. Is that enough for Buck? I don't know. I didn't like this trade for the Knicks simply because, as mentioned previously, they don't have their first round pick. They traded that away to the Bucks. It seemed like they kind of, had a little bit of a split personality as to whether they wanted to go for it or compete. I think the same thing happened with the Celtics. It feels like last season the Celtics wanted to rebuild a little bit while still being in contention, and then this year they decided to completely blow it up. The Knicks, I felt like last year, went all in and decided to blow it up again. And the thing that surprised me is they moved Buck Williams when they'd been shopping Julius Erving, and I guess they must not have liked what the market was for 32-year-old Julius Erving, and maybe the rest of the league foresaw what was coming in training camp when he took a fairly significant hit. All that said, I think the Knicks still have a fairly solid team. Wayne Cooper is a workmanlike center that can block a lot of shots. David Greenwood, I think, is a dynamic power forward. Of course, Erving, he's lost a step, but he's still, an excellent player. They've got Trent Tucker on the come. He might be, their sixth man off the bench. Daryl Griffith is going to be an offensive dynamo now, not having to share the ball with Buck Williams. And Ricky Green is a very capable point guard who can probably kick in some scoring. So I don't think the Knicks tore everything down to the studs. So maybe that pick is not going to be quite as good as the Bucks would hope it is. But I guess, that's why we play the games, right? And then the last trade of the season came a couple of hours before training camps happened. That was Louis Orr Lewis. I don't know whether he likes Lewis or Louis. Anyway, Louis Orr going from the Bucks for 1 point and Cedric Maxwell. I know when Doug messaged me about this, I messaged back a little bit sarcastically, something to the effect of, oh, you just realized you have six players that you need to protect in training camp. And based on the commissioner's podcast where he pointed out, all the points he had to spend on training camp insurance, I think that did turn out to be the reason why. So for me, Cedric Maxwell, I've had him for a while. I re-signed him for a big contract, but you'll notice the second year of the contract is non-guaranteed. It's a team option. I was never really going to pay him that unless he had some sort of TC jump that put him into the blue. But Now, Doug has an expiring contract instead, and I have a not inspired contract. But, you know, as we'll talk about momentarily, I think based on the results of training camp, I can live with the results there. So I'm going to take a quick break here. We'll then come back. We'll talk a little bit or a lot bit about what happened in training camp. I'm not really interested in rehashing the draft because I think we can kind of talk through the, you know, we talked through the big moves in the draft based on trades. And I didn't see any picks like Frank Johnson last year where I looked at it and I said, where did that come from? Or I saw somebody who was falling and falling and wondering, you know, why didn't he get picked? You know, there were a couple of picks, say the Nets pick of Fat Lever, I thought was a little bit interesting because I felt Ed and the Nets already had, at least in my opinion, a very strong point guard in Larry Drew. And I thought he might have been better suited going for, you know, say, I don't know, maybe a Terry Cummings at the power forward position or maybe a James Worthy at the small forward position. But clearly he liked what he saw in Lever. I'm actually a big Fat Lever fan, mostly because, as I've mentioned before, he's a player that has a high potential rating in an area that is non-standard for his position. He's an excellent rebounder for a point guard. I tend to love that sort of thing. I've not made it a secret. You know, it's one of the reasons I like Kurt Rambis, because he has a high steal rating for a power forward. So that's just, it's one of the things, I guess, that, you know, is my particular flavor of interest is, you know, show me something that you're doing that not everybody else does, and I'm going to be interested. But, you know, in general, I didn't think anybody in the draft went more than one or two picks before I thought they'd go or one or two picks after where I thought they'd go. So there's not really a ton to talk about with the draft. It kind of went to form. The teams that selected, I don't think anybody did a bang-up amazing job. I didn't think anybody did a horrible job. I think it was just a very solid draft all around. So with that, we'll take a break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to address the elephant in the room, which is the training camps. And I'll give a little more information. I know this was something that was talked about on the commissioner's pod, at least the information as I have it as it relates to training camp. And again, this is not any special insight into the code. This is just, you know, if you had played 100 seasons, what trends you probably would have observed. So we'll be back shortly.
Good lunch, Mom.
Oops. Billy, your milk. Look out.
Oh, Billy.
Out of my way, you old bag.
Who are you, and what are you doing in my house?
I'm the brazen paper towel man, and I'm here to clean up that spill, unless you'd rather use that wimpy, sorry-ass paper towel you usually use.
Well, how good is brazen?
How good is brazen? Shut your trap, and I'll tell you.
Hey, you can't talk to my mom like that.
Shut up, punk, or I'll smack you on the back of the head with my class ring. Brazen paper towels eat spills for breakfast. One single sheet of brazen will sop up a small, scummy pond. See that milk?
Yes.
Well, watch this, baby.
What was that scream?
That was the milk, begging for mercy.
Brazen paper towels. We're an Arthur Daniels Heartland company, but you don't need to know that.
This week on Zenora, Queen of Battle, a journey is undertaken.
Come up here, Janelle. You can ride in front of me.
Hold me tight.
But they must make haste.
We'll have to gallop.
Oh, yes.
All on the next Zenora.
All right, so as promised, we're going to talk about training camp. So basically, training camp, as I see it, kind of is divided into three sections. I'll start with the ones that people kind of expect they know first, and that is the players that are 31 and older. If you are 31 or older, when training camp rolls through, What it is going to do is it is going to smack your potentials down. It's going to smack your athleticism down. It's going to smack your player down in general. And it can vary in terms of how severely it hits a player. Usually older players are hit more severely. But in general, the trend on older players is to smack things down somewhere between, let's say, 3 to 6 points on players that are 31, but I have seen it higher. And the highest I can ever remember seeing on any given rating decaying is 17, which is an oddly specific number. I suspect it might go from 1 to 20, maybe on a bell curve or something. But basically, if you have an older player, you can expect his potentials are going to be hit, with one exception. That exception is free throw shooting. And this is something I have noticed over the years of training camp. Free throw shooting never really goes up or down in terms of potential. And the current rating might fluctuate by, you know, a point here, a point there. It's also the only rating I've ever seen where you might have a potential that is higher than your current and it still loses 1 or 2 points. But generally, free throw shooting, a player's ability to shoot free throws or the free throw percentage they're going to hit, stays pretty darn constant throughout their career. So something to keep in mind, if you have a poor free thrower and you want him to get better, you're going to have to use paid training to do that. You know, Shaquille O'Neal doesn't learn how to shoot free throws. You're going to have to pay for that. So that's the first thing I will mention with training camp, is older players generally will see their potential hits going on, and that can range anywhere from, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 on the mild end to 15, 16, 17 on the severe end. The next phase of player is what I call the players that are in their prime, and that is ages 28, 29, and 30 when training camp is run. These players generally do not see any change in potentials. They may see a little bit of erosion in their athletic abilities, so strength, quickness, especially jump and stamina. You might see -1 or -2, even, you know, 3, 4, 5 as they get closer to 30. But generally, a player's athleticism and potentials will stay pretty consistent from 28 to 30. And then, of course, there's 27 and under. To be specific, as far as the All Commissioners podcast goes, it's not, is it under 27? It's 27 and under is the what I would call the young players and the players at risk in training camp. And as I mentioned before, my general rule of thumb is that 1 in every 6 players under the age of 27 is going to get hit by training camp. In other words, their potentials are going to be reduced. And I have noticed that this tends to be a reduction, and again, this seems to be random, of between 10 and 20%. Meaning if a player has a, let's say we've got a big who has a rebound rating of 100 and a passing rating of 30, and he gets a 15% hit, he's going to lose 15 points off the rebounding rating, but he's only going to lose 4 or 5 off of the passing rating because it's the same percent. So something to be aware of is it does seem to be based on a percentage of their ratings across the board. And so that's why generally you see players that are bad at something, you know, take a hit, but it's relatively mild, where if their star is at it, it looks like it gets thoroughly destroyed. And since most of us are paying attention to our stars and not our end of bench guys, we tend to think of this as a big hit. But it is essentially a percentage hit of 10 to 20%. So that's 1 in 6 players. 1 in 12 players will get a training camp boost. And what happens on a training camp boost is that potential ratings go up. Again, it seems to be more or less by percentage across the board. Although, yeah, not always. I have seen some where the percentages is uneven, but generally a potential jump is limited. I mean, the highest I've seen is like a 15, 16 point jump, but most jumps are somewhere in the range of 5 to 10 points. So, you know, take that as you will. You know, that's where the potential jump is going to be. So we talk about player potential. So after training camp goes through, and I should mention, athletic ratings on younger players tend to go up. Even players that are hit by the training camp potential destruction that are under or that are 27 and under, at least in my experience, generally do not take a corresponding hit in their athletic ratings. Generally, it's only older players that will see a decline in their athleticism. So if you have a highly athletic young player, you can rest assured his athleticism is probably not going to be demolished. There always seems to be, you know, regardless of the rating, the ability, and regardless of the potential, obviously a rating can't cross its potential, but no matter what the rating, there always seems to be the ability for it to vary up or down by 1 or 2 points for any one player in any given season. But 1 or 2 points is generally not make or break. So anyway, that's what happens on potential. There's the 1 in 6 chance of a jump for 27 and under, 1 in 12 chance of a nerf for 27 and under. 27 and under will generally see either no change or a very modest increase, you know, maybe 2-3 points at the most in their athletic areas. At 28 through 30, the potentials stop changing, and you might see a very small decline in athletic ability. And then once you hit 31, you are on the downswing. Your potentials are going to die. Your athleticism is going to die. And that's what's going to happen to your potentials. And you can think of this in any order, but I prefer to think of it in this order. The first thing that the game does is it moves your potential ratings. Once it has moved your potential ratings, it then applies your training camp settings to your current ratings. For those ratings that have a current rating, again, free throws are the exception. Free throws seem to be their own beast. But basically, it will take your current rating and try to, if there is a gap, try to move your current score up toward your potential rating. If there is no gap, it will not move it. And of course, if your potential rating has come down past your current rating, it's going to bring your current rating down because your current rating can never exceed your potential rating. But in general, you know, again, at least, you know, from what I've seen in doing this, you can never climb more than 10 points of current rating in any given season. And I'm going to pick on Bill Laimbeer because this was an example that came up in the commissioner's chat. You know, anybody who was watching Laimbeer's ratings and wants to go back and compare them to last season will notice that he took a fairly significant hit in his offensive rebounding rating. I think he was down by 14 points, but his inside and jump shot and his defensive rebounding all went up. And the question that came up was, why is that? And I think the answer, Doug touched on it, but I'll make it explicit. You know, again, if you think of when training camp hits you, it takes your current or it takes your future ratings down. And if your current rating, was close to your future rating, it will take your current rating down too, because current can never exceed your potential. So what probably happened to Laimbeer is his current offensive rebounding rating was close to or at his potential for offensive rebounding. And when that took a dive, it pushed his current down with it. But even though his inside and jump shot potentials may have taken a dive, there was still room for improvement there. And I'm just going to use, these are not Bill Laimbeer's numbers, but I'm going to use an example that everybody can kind of relate to. Imagine you have a player with a 50 current rating and an 80 potential rating. That 80 potential rating gets absolutely destroyed in training camp and is now 65. Well, your current is still 50, meaning you still have the ability to increase your current rating up to 65. And since you're only going to increase by 10, it goes up, let's say, the maximum to 60. So it looks to you like nothing happened because your current got better. But that's because there was a big enough gap between your current rating and your potential rating that the potential could be reduced and you would still have room to grow. And so, again, I'm only using Bill as an example because he's what came up on the commissioner's podcast. But I'm That's why you can see a few players, especially those that are noted, got hit in training camp, had potential increases or had current rating increases and decreases. And you will also see this, I mentioned that potential ratings are stable for players 28, 29, 30, and go down for players that are over or that are 31 and over. And anybody who's paying attention last season will notice that in last season's training camp, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar actually went up in inside rating. I want to say he was in the 80s in the first season, and he went up into the 90s. And then this season, he came down. So one of the things that it is worth noting that I think has been made known elsewhere, but it's probably a good thing to remind ourselves of, is that it is possible under the hood in fast break for a potential rating to be over 100. And it is also possible in an unmodified version of the game, I suppose, for your current rating to exceed 100. The problem is when that is shown on the game or exported to HTML, all ratings over 100 are shown as 100, meaning your 100 could be anywhere from 100 to 200, and you can't tell the difference. And quite some time ago, we thought this was stupid for a couple of reasons. Number one, if your real rating is, let's say, 150, you might see that rating of 100 and think, oh, I can trade him for this other player with 100 and he's going to produce. Well, no, because you've actually got 150. So number one, it deceives you in what you've got. And number two, if you're grading on a scale to 1 to 100, why would you go over 100? I think that was a weird decision on the part of the programmer who made the game. I'm sure somebody like Wilt Chamberlain scoring probably has like a 200 at some point. But anyway, one of the things that we have done from many, many seasons, I think probably since season one, maybe season two, is all ratings over 100 for current ratings are reduced to 100. Potential ratings are left alone, and what that means is a player with a potential rating over 100 will not get a current rating over 100, but it gives him a buffer when age starts taking his potential. So you can imagine a player with, say, a 120 inside rating. He's going to hit age 31, and that might degrade to 110. He's still going to have a 100 inside rating. At 32, it degrades to 103. He's still got 100 inside rating. So basically, what a rating of over 100 means is that player will stay at his peak in that attribute longer than he normally would as he ages. So I know some people have requested player cards. So understand that's what a potential rating for the purposes of the NPBSL means. Because every season as we go through and we do training camp insurance to fix the potentials that got nerfed and set them back to last season's potential ratings, we also go through and nerf the current ratings of over 100 just because it's kind of silly to do that. And worth noting, and Doug touched on this on the podcast, is that who gets bumped and slapped by training camp does seem to be totally random. I know there was a thought, it feels like the game plays favorites. What's the saying? Don't anthropomorphize computers. They hate that. But it really is random. But Doug had it right in that if you were to look at most of the players that got training camp jumps, they are red free agents. So it doesn't really help them to get the training camp boosts because they're already so awful that they're not going to make any teams. I would say, generally, as I mentioned before, I like having younger players in my extra roster slots, and I have no problem cutting them if they get destroyed by training camp, assuming they're on a decent contract. And so I guess the classic example for that this season would be Brook Stepp. I grabbed Brook Stepp with that 76ers pick at the beginning of the second round, hoping he'd be good, and training camp decided, no, he's going to be dead. So yeah, no harm, no foul. His contract's $20,000. I'm going to cut him. Fine. Hopefully that kind of gives you an idea of what's going on in training camp and also gives you an idea. And again, I can point specifically, and I don't mind doing this because Doug already knows this, to Sleepy Floyd. You know, he has A potentials in his handles and in his passing abilities, which is great until you look at his current ratings. Oh, sorry, he has B potential. Oh, sorry, yeah, he has B potentials in handles, A potentials in handles. No, that's Phil Ford. Okay, never mind, A and A. So Sleepy Boy is an AA. But if you look at his current ratings, and this is after, you know, getting a nice little boost in training camp, to his currents, obviously he got hit and needed training camp on his potentials or insurance on his potentials. His currents are 30s, which means even if we assume he's at the lowest A, which would be 81, and we assume he grows at the maximum growth per year, that's 10 points per year, it's not going to be for at least 5 seasons before he reaches his potential, meaning he's going to be 27. So if you want to get your player with that super high rating to his potential faster, that's when it's time to invest in current rating training. So just something to be aware of there. I'm going to take one more brief break. I'm going to come back. It's going to be a shorter segment. I think, you know, each of these segments has gone about 20 minutes. Hopefully that was helpful in terms of explaining training camp for everyone. There were only a very small handful of I would say, good players that jumped in training camp this season. The irony, such as it is that one of those players is a player that I traded away a couple of seasons ago, and I'm kind of regretting that, and I'll leave that as an exercise to the reader to go and figure out who that was. But anyway, we're going to take another quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to round things out by looking through a very, very fast preview. I'm not going to go team by team with detailed analysis. I'm just going to give my very quick, let's say, minute and a half take on how I see each division going and what I think the playoff picture is going to look like. Okay, so let's talk about things. This was kind of a topic on the Commissioner podcast, and I'm going to echo some of the thoughts that came up there. I think there was a very significant shift in power this offseason from the East to the West, mostly based on the Bucks sending everybody and their brother to all these teams on the West Coast. But what it does mean is last season's number one and two seeds, the Knicks and the Bucks, have opened things up. And I do think that leaves one team that I see as having been a consistent powerhouse in the Pacers that I think will probably be one of the front runners for the Eastern Conference crown. And I think in the Atlantic, the Bullets, who were very solid last season and then went and added Buck Williams, probably have the best chance to win that division. I think, you know, the Nets, after their title run in season one, they're still looking to fill out their roster. They could compete, but I think they're like a piece away. Obviously, the Knicks are blowing it up. 76ers could get into things with the right lineups. But given that the 76ers have been disappointing the last couple of seasons, and Norm Nixon is a nice addition, but I don't think he's a guy that's going to take a perpetual loser and make them into a championship contender. I think there's one point guard in the league that does that, and he's currently stuck playing small forward in Phoenix. I don't know that the 76ers, they might be a playoff team, but they're not going to challenge for the division. And the Celtics 0-6 preseason, if I was a Celtics fan, would really concern me. They sent off Bernard King. They're shopping Maurice Cheeks. So clearly they're all in for the rebuild. I think they might be going a season too early just because, you know, it's not clear what their plan is for adding talent other than tank in 1984. And I think there's going to be some fierce tanking competition in 1984. I suspect that's why we've seen the Knicks tear it down. We've seen the Celtics tearing it down. The Bucks are tearing it down. The Hawks seem to be amenable to tearing it down. They haven't committed that way yet, but it's clear the Bulls, by their trade block, are thinking of, you know what, maybe we should tear this down. The Pistons had an 0-6 preseason. So, you know, quite frankly, who's the team that, you know, I think the Pacers and the Bullets are your playoff locks. I think the Nets, you know, knowing that they won the title a couple of seasons back and they haven't made any significant subtractions, they're probably in it. I still think the Knicks are good enough to make the playoffs as presently constituted. So, you know, that could be a thing. Then I think it's wide open. You know, the Cavaliers, I think they've been trying to build. It just hasn't worked out for them. They've been kind of a fringe playoff team. And I think the Bucks maybe got too much in their sell-off to really tank properly. They could maybe sneak in as the sixth seed. I don't see the Hawks have made enough moves to catch up. You know, the Pistons, I love their young talent. They're just, you know, they're not enough guys on the roster. So, yeah, like I said, I think the four teams you can count on in the East are the Bullets, the Nets, the Pacers, and maybe the Knicks or the Bucks. And then everybody else is going to be, it's going to be, you know, do they pull the trigger on trades? It's, are they sellers? Are they buyers? You know, the Bulls could be either way. The Hawks could be either way. Cavaliers could be either way. Bucks could be either way. If the Knicks keep selling, they could go either way. If the 76ers buy, they could go either way. The only teams that I really think are going to be having a bad year are the two teams that we saw at the bottom of the preseason standings in the Celtics and the Pistons. Flipping over to the West, oh my gosh, the West and the Pacific are loaded for bear. I kind of complained about this a little bit on Discord. But, you know, the Warriors just went to the finals and added Robert Parrish. I think the Warriors are your, or I'm sorry, the Nuggets rather, went and won the finals. So they should be your favorites. But the Warriors went to the conference finals, excuse me, and added Robert Parrish. So they are now doing great. And I thought the Warriors had a very, very good free agency. They got a ton of depth. I thought Bobby Jones was a nice pickup for them. James Bailey gives them depth. They're just so deep in the front court. The only weakness I really see on the Warriors is point guard, and I don't know which teams other than the Suns, if they move Magic to point, which I don't suspect they're going to do, have the ability to take advantage of that. So Nuggets as defending champs, you need to watch out for. Warriors went to the conference finals. They added Robert Parrish. You need to watch out for them. The Kings, they picked up Calvin Natt last year. They've added Bill Laimbeer this year. They're going to be tough. We talked about the Mavericks. They are offense city. They got five guys. I don't know how you stop them. You're just going to have to outscore them. The Jazz made it to the playoffs last season. I don't see them necessarily falling off much. The Lakers finally got Dave Corzine in to play power forward, so they've got a full lineup. The Clippers, with their trade with the Bucks, you know, they picked up some help in the backcourt for Reggie Theus, so now they can slide Rolando Blackman to his natural small forward position. You know, I think they might be short a true power forward, but I think Greg Ballard does a decent enough job filling in at power forward to make them dangerous. At least I like their starting five. So the Clippers and Lakers both have great starting fives. The Suns have Magic. He's got help this year. That was the team that I thought really, really scared me with, you know, other than the Warriors, you know, by going out and signing away Ron Brewer from the Clippers. now they've actually got somebody besides John Long on that team that can score along with Magic. So, you know, they've got Magic, they've got Tree. Bob McAdoo may have taken a bit of a hit in training camp, but he's still a capable scorer. John Bagley, as a point guard, may not be ready yet, but if the Suns throw a few points in him, he could very quickly get up to speed. So I think the Suns could definitely be a threat. The Supersonics have, you know, maybe they're not quite ready yet. They might be, you know, a year or two away with Ainge and Wilkins still needing to improve. But they've got a solid lineup. They've got solid bigs in Abdul-Jabbar and Shays. Sven Nader's a nice backup. Obviously, Neek and Ainge are nice wings. Ray Williams, I love the Kelvin Ranzi pickup for them. So they're deep. And, of course, you know, the Trailblazers, I don't want to talk too much about my own team because that's boring. But, you know, they bring back most of the team that won the division last season. And they're all young. The only guy that was over 30 was shipped off in the offseason. So it's going to be kind of a ship of Theseus situation, you know, with Kareem going out. You know, how do we substitute in? And when you, you know, take out one plank at a time, at what point is it no longer the ship of Theseus? So I think the Trailblazers are not looking forward to all the other teams in the Western Conference. But I think if you were to just look at, you know, the baseline where they were at last year, you have to feel pretty good about them. I like the Rockets a little less than I did last season. I love that they protected Larry Bird with training camp insurance this time. They also protected Otis Birdsong, but he did take a TC hit. And I think in a Western Conference that is just loaded for bear, you know, even though Birdsong's potentials were restored, he'll probably be back next season. I don't think you can afford to take a step back. So I don't know that the Rockets are going to be able to hang around. I don't know that the Spurs are going to be able to hang around. Again, it's not that I don't like their core. I think McHale, Aguirre, Thomas is a good core. The problem is that's only three really solid guys, and most of the rest of the conference is working with five or six solid guys. So I think the Spurs are in a little bit of trouble this season. But again, I really like their core, and I think if they just stick with it, you know, they're going to have a chance sooner rather than later. The only comfort, I guess, I can take in the Warriors is that, you know, they're starting to reach the point where their core is in their peak and in another year or two is going to be passing out of their primes. You know, Parrish is 29. Malone is 27, Kenny Carr, 27, Eddie Johnson, 27. So it's a team that, as it's presently constituted, is going to be tough for a season or two. But once that 1985 season rolls through, they're going to start falling off. So maybe that gives some teams some hope. And again, I think there are certain matchups. Obviously, the Nuggets proved they could handle them last season. The Kings might be able to weaponize Calvin Knatt. The Jazz could do something with Kiki Vandeweghe. The Mavericks could find a way to put together the talents of King and Gervin to give them fits on the perimeter. You know, the Suns, of course, have Magic. The Clippers and Lakers are solid up and down. The Trailblazers, you know, we saw that last season. They're at least able to perform in the regular season. We haven't been able to convert that into playoffs yet, but you know, hopefully at some point. And even the Sonics, you know, I mentioned before the weakness to me anyways at point guard, they've got two of them in Ray Williams and Kelvin Ranzi, so they might be able to be a matchup problem for the Warriors. So all in all, I think, no offense to the East, I think it's going to be a lot less interesting than the West. The West is going to be an absolute dogfight, I think. The main consequence of this that I see is that I think, you know, with all of the teams in the West being really tough, they're going to beat up on each other, and it's going to be kind of like the, you know, the lobsters that pull each other back into the boiling water. I don't know that there's a team that is going to be able to really put a huge amount of distance between themselves and the rest of the conference. You know, I think, you know, like I said, I think the Warriors are the front runners. I do think they're going to win it. But if you're going to ask me, you know, how many games do they win the conference by, it's not going to be 10 or 15 games. It might be 4 or 5, mostly because, you know, I really respect what the Suns are going to be able to do. The Suns have been, you know, keeping it close down the stretch the last two seasons. They won it the first season. And, you know, just with so many improved teams, there just aren't many easy wins on the schedule for the Warriors, so they're not going to be able to puff up their record. I think if a team in the East had been able to make the kind of moves that the Warriors had, or if you moved the Warriors to the East, I could see them feasting on opponents that have all decided to rebuild. I mean, yeah, you look at the Western Conference, I don't think anybody is trying to go in for a tank and a rebuild right now, whereas you can probably identify 4 or 5 teams in the East that are doing that. So just based on that alone, because the Warriors aren't going to have a lot of easy wins, they're not going to be pulling away from the pack. They're going to be kept close just because every night is going to be war. And I think this season, perhaps more than seasons 1 or 2, the real thing to keep your eye on is the injury report. Especially in the West, this is a season where if one of your key players is injured for a couple of weeks, that's going to cost you 2 or 3 playoff spots, or it could, you know, if you were a 4 or 5 seed, it could knock you out of playoffs entirely. So health is going to be more important, I think, than ever this season. And because of that, and because, you know, injuries are, you know, a bit of a random thing, it's very hard to predict how things are going to wind up, because one key injury here or there could make or break a team's fortunes in the West. And the other thing that I wonder if we're going to see is a quiet trading period or a busy trading period. And we heard the commissioner podcast, you know, player movement is the lifeblood of the league. And I do think that's true to a degree. You know, what keeps us engaged are the trade talks and the thought of how do I make my team better. And when nobody's a seller or nobody's a buyer, there's not a lot of avenues to make your team better. And everybody has to start looking for free agency, which, you know, is something else to bear in mind. Going back very briefly to free agency, I mentioned that one of the reasons that I got rid of Kareem was I was not looking forward to free agency. And I find it ironic that I was warning everybody against overpaying for players in free agency, and then I was the only one that went out and handed out a max to Greg Kelser. But I felt warranted in doing it simply because none of my team at the time had guaranteed contracts past the current season. Obviously, I'm going to be looking to max a player like Bill Cartwright. I'll be looking to pay David Thompson because those guys, you know, they've averaged, you know, 16 to 20 in David Thompson's case. He carried me when Bernard King was out. So those are guys I feel comfortable maxing. And obviously, the Louis Orr pickup is now a little more than I maybe would have liked to pay. But most of the rest of my squad is either on cheap deals or is on deals that I can cut as a team option if I need to. So that's why I felt I could pay Greg Kelser. Most teams this season are going to have 2 or 3 guys coming up for free agency. And this season and next season are probably going to be the deepest free agent classes we're going to have because there's no restricted free agency. This season and next season are the seasons to strike if you want to snipe that superstar player. So I think based on that, that's going to drive prices up. It's going to drive cap space down. And I wanted to try to get ahead of that, you know, by locking up Kelser and making sure that my cap position was decent. You know, I'm not thrilled with the Louis Orr contract, but, you know, I felt like I really couldn't say no when it was basically Cedric Maxwell at 1 point. I love Maxwell. I told Doug, I apologize, you know, when we were cleaning out his locker after he left because it was so close to training camp. I didn't, you know, get to message him much until after training camp when he had taken a hit in training camp. I had planned on leaving him exposed, so he would have died on my team as well. But I said, I didn't realize he'd taken up drinking shots of fried gravy. That is the risk you take, right? You know, you leave a guy exposed and maybe he takes a hit. And in this case, I think Doug mentioned, he had kind of thought about starting Maxwell as his starting power forward. Well, post-hit, I don't think that's going to happen. He's no longer the offensive rebounding beast he used to be. And just in general, he's a pretty underwhelming player at this point. And, fortunately for Doug, he has a team option next year, so he can make Maxwell go away. That'll be something else that will be interesting to see next season, as we have so many guys that are young and stars. But that also means that they are going to need to be insured in training camp. So how valuable do points become? And are people trying to stockpile points to pay for training camp insurance on all of these players that they're trying to protect? Which brings me to my final point, which is, hey guys, it's been two seasons. Start doing some media. It's 25 free points. You realize that, if you were to go, I'm going to go look right now because I'm just curious about it, because I think I haven't had a lot of all-stars. I haven't had a lot of all-league selections. But in terms of, getting points for winning, I think I've done a pretty good job in terms of accumulating points for wins and win streaks. And so that might give you an idea of how many points you can get off of that. So let's see. My team rewards for the first season were 30 points. My team rewards for last season were 27 points. That's basically what I'm making on my media contributions with these pods. So, I dare say, the Trailblazers have been one of the most successful teams over the first two seasons of the league. And we're only getting as many points for team rewards as you can get through the media. So please get in, get your media points. I loved the Commissioner's podcast. I want to hear more of them. I want to hear everybody else's takes. I don't want to listen to myself talk. It may sound that way when I'm on these pods, but I really don't. So that's my recommendation coming out of this pod, is start figuring out how you're going to get your media points. Do a podcast, do an article series, do some analysis, do something, get the activity up, because you're going to need those points. As we mentioned, you can think of it, with a 1-in-6 chance of getting hit, if you draft a guy when he's 22, you're going to have him in training camp his rookie season at 22. You're going to have him at 23, 24, 25, 26, and 27, assuming you keep him in RFA. That's six seasons. Now, a 1-in-6 chance of getting hit doesn't mean he's going to get hit in that season or in one of those six seasons, but it means it's really, really likely that he's going to get hit in one of those seasons. In fact, if I were going to do the math, I guess, you just do 5 out of 6 chances to avoid it. What is your chance of avoiding a hit in training camp? It's about a 1-in-3 chance. So do you really want to take a 1-in-3 chance that one of your star players is going to die? And that's per star player, meaning if you have 3 star players, it's almost guaranteed one of them is going to die at least once. You want that training camp insurance there. Now, granted, I know you get 3 free ones. This is one of the other strategic things you need to think about when you're preparing your team, is you need to think about points. You need to think about training camp insurance. And you need to think about who are you willing to expose. To be quite honest, when I was going through my list of players that I was thinking, okay, do I want to expose them in training camp? I'm glad I chose to insure Rambus because he did get hit. But quite frankly, he was one of the players that I thought very long and hard about, not because I don't like him and not because he's not an integral part of my core, but because I think Bill Cartwright is more important, James Worthy is more important, and because I had just put a huge contract on him, Greg Kelcer was more important. You can argue whether or not Kelser and Rambus would, you know, who would be more important if they were on the same contract. But contract has to figure into it. And so I thought, you know, theoretically, I could let Rambus twist in the wind. And if he gets hit and I have to cut him, you know, because he's on a rookie contract, I'm only taking a hit of, you know, a few tens of thousands of dollars. Or, you know, maybe I can trade him. But, you know, even if nobody wants him after he gets hit, it's not a devastating, crippling cap hit. Kelser was a devastating, crippling cap hit should I have left him uninsured. And then that's going to be about it. I'll wrap it for here, and we'll be back again next week.